we don't call it waste. We call it our fertilizer.
100%.
And, you know, that's probably what my brother and I have worked really hard with as we grew the cropping enterprise, our feedlot. You know, since my dad and uncle handed over the reins, hasn't grown near as much as our cropping side. And that's just opportunities that come along, cash flow, you know, different things like that. But one of the things that we've really honed in on, and we started this when we came back, is we recognized I'm a big precision ag, we record everything. There's nothing that comes to this yard or leaves this yard that we aren't recording somewhere, whether it's through John Deere Ops Center, scales, whatever. We realized real quickly as I started doing analysis 20 some years ago was comparing fields that we consistently got manure versus fields that didn't. Mm-hmm. And there was a massive difference. So we started not only treating our manure like a fertility. We take it the precision accuracy of our spreading our manure as much as important as spreading any fertilizer.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
Grow a carbon crop below your row crop. Add carbon to your balance sheet with Loam Bio. Revenue grew, so did your hours. The owner's box, buy back 20 a week. Stop hiring for problems automation can solve. Start with Elevate Agents. Don't hire another VA stuck in 2015. Hire a remote AI specialist from Latin who runs AI tools, works in your time zone, and helps your team move faster. Schedule your free strategy call at www.wisevas.io. Zentrix OS, the business operating system built for teams who are serious about goals, tasks, and measurable results. One platform to run your entire operation. Zentrix Insights. The right person in the right seat starts with knowing how your team is actually wired. Visit ZentrixInsights.com.
Welcome to the Crop Science Podcast Show, brought to you by Wisenetics. I'm Brian Arnell, and I'm coming to you from the campus of Oklahoma State University. Today, excited to have on Sean Fikema, a farmer from Luverne, Minnesota. He is a co-owner operator of Fikema Farms and Circle F Farms. As a part of a multi-generational farming operation, he combines practical farming experience with precision agriculture and conservation-focused management to enhance both productivity and sustainability. Sean is a strong advocate for innovation in agriculture while maintaining the values and traditions of the family farm. Sean is also a proud farmer, a proud father of two girls, and has been married for 25 years. Sean, thank you so much for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
So give our listeners a little bit of a background of what the Fikema Farms operation looks like.
Sure. So we're a third generation. I farm with my wife and my brother, Mike, and his wife, Stacy. Both our wives are involved. My wife is heavily involved. She does a lot of our agronomy stuff with me. She's kind of, I call her my cover crop queen. She's the one that figures that out. We run a 4,000 head capacity beef feed yard, and then we farm around 7,000, a little over 7,000 acres of crop ground, corn, soy, oats, triticale, rye, alfalfa, lots of different things that we dabble with, some sunflowers. We've got a great team. We got about, we got a lot going on. So I think we got like 12 or 13 of us running around today. But we just got a great team of people that help make this all happen. This is well beyond me. I can't manage all this without the team that I got. So
I guess I got a couple questions, and one is a little bit less about the farming, but you know, in Oklahoma State, there's a lot of discussion about how we do proper farm transitioning. And now you're saying you and your brother are farming. I'm going to tell you, you look like a young farmer to be that. Usually I talk to somebody your age, you know, dad's still operating, grandpa's still operating. Sometimes great grandpa is still calling the shots.
Sure.
Can you speak just briefly on how you and the family has managed your transitions?
Yeah. You know, and I, to be perfectly honest with you, I have to give all the credit to my dad and my uncle. So my dad and my uncle took over the operation in the late 60s when they got done with military service. from my grandpa. They came back to the farm and said, we ain't milking no more cows. And that was what they were. They were just they had a few cows, they fed some cattle, hog, you know, the typical 1960s farm, right? And, when my uncle and my dad came back to the farm, they told grandpa, we ain't milking no cows. And my dad, was just a cattle man. I mean, he just loved cattle. So they started building feed yards, and they had some opportunity to pick up some crop ground, and they kind of just grew from there. And I really, really give a lot of credit again to my dad and my uncle, and also my grandpa, both all very progressive when it came to teaching the next generation. But they were so good at letting us fail on our own. They were more than willing to let us be responsible and give us responsibilities, but also to let us fail. I agree. I mean, I'm not as young as you probably think I am. Maybe, I don't know. I'm in my mid 40s. I got my kids are just about out of the house already. So, but we were, right away when my brother and I came back from college, they were like, here, this is your area. You're going to take care of this. You're going to take care of this. And they were always there standing right by our side for any advice, and whatnot. And, but they really did. They really wanted to build the family legacy through teaching management. And, I've watched so many friends that doesn't happen. And then you get to your mid 50s or 60s, and then all of a sudden it's all dropped on you. And the other part of it was too, my dad was diagnosed with Alzheimer's at the age of 60. And so he has since passed away, but that also sped things up, right? Like my uncle wanted him to be a part of that transition. And so that drove some of it as well. But him and my Uncle Bob were both just very good at moving, transitioning.
I think your comment, and I loved it, that I don't see enough of, or maybe I'm just biased, but I guess I'm 45. I assumed you're about my age. I was looking at that. But like you said, there's a lot of 60-somethings that are just now getting the farms. But I love what you said is they allowed you to fail. And that's what it seems like is some of the rub is that the older generation wants to prevent failure and to really to learn to manage. You have to have that opportunity to try and fail from time to time.
Absolutely. I'm reading a book right now from Max Licato that's entitled How to Get a Return on Failure. I've often told a lot of people, because I get asked a lot, how have you managed through this, different things, and how have you gotten to do what you're doing? And the reality is it's not because I'm any more successful than anybody else. It's probably because I've failed more than anybody else. The big thing is how do you fail fast and figure it out and move on? And I guess that's what my dad taught me. It's nothing, it's nothing I just was so good at or whatever. Well, I'm pretty good at failing, I'll give you that. But it's one of those things that you just, you have to try things. And our family's always been fairly progressive and risk takers. And sometimes it works out, sometimes it don't. I agree with you. We as a society, I think we've forgotten how to fail, or we've gotten so risk adverse, we're not willing to fail.
That last one's huge. Well, moving to the farm, I'm curious of how integrated is your feedlot and your farm? Are you able to support the feedlot completely, or you still have to bring in proteins or minerals?
From a feedstock standpoint, we are able to supply all of the corn needs for the feedlot, corn and forage. What we do is bring in quite a bit of distiller grains, modified wet distiller grains. And that's, it's really been a game changer for our feedlot for the last 20 plus years. It just changed the way we feed cattle. It's a bonus for us all the way around, right? Like I can sell corn. They take what they need out of it. I've worked a lot with a company of Gevo, and I've worked also very closely with Delta Airlines. And, there's always this food versus fuel debate. And we like to say it's both, because we're using both. We're still using all the parts of the corn we always did. It's just we're doing it differently and it looks differently. So Other than just our trace, some of our trace minerals, everything we supply for the feed yard for the most part.
How do you manage? So I'm soil fertility background. So my curiosity now is, how do you manage the waste out of the feed yard? Because I'm down south, so our feed yards look a little bit different than your feed yards. So how does that work?
Well, first off, we don't call it waste. We call it our fertilizer.
100%.
And, that's probably what my brother and I have worked really hard with as we grew the cropping enterprise, our feedlot, you know, since my dad and uncle handed over the reins, hasn't grown near as much as our cropping side. And that's just opportunities that come along, cash flow, you know, different things like that. But one of the things that we've really honed in on, and we started this when we came back, is we recognized I'm a big precision ag, we record everything. There's nothing that comes to this yard or leaves this yard that we aren't recording somewhere, whether it's through John Deere Op Center, scales, whatever. We realized real quickly as I started doing analysis 20 some years ago was comparing fields that consistently got manure versus fields that didn't. Mm-hmm. And there was a massive difference. So we started not only treating our manure like a fertility. We take it the precision accuracy of our spreading our manure as much as important as spreading any fertilizer. And to the point we've been able to spread between our beef manure. We've also made deals with large hog integrators. So we also pump about 10 to 11 million gallons of swine manure. That's none of our own swine. So out of all our acres, we have nothing that doesn't get manure at some point. So, which, you know, I mentioned before the show, you know, a lot of our acres are pretty close to home base, which that's been driven by, we recognized value in manure. And when we were given opportunities to pick up some ground next to a sow unit, next to a finishing barn, we made those contacts. We reached out, made contact with them and said, hey, you know, we're not trying to take it from anybody else, but if you're struggling, and believe it or not, 15 years ago around here, 20 years ago, people didn't want to mess with manure. It was, the compaction, but my brother and I are like, you know what? We know how to manage manure. We know what it does for our soil. So I guess that's kind of a long story or a long answer to our question, but that's, we treat manure like it's coming from a co-op. Like we dial it in.
With that, what's the timing for y'all and how do you manage that? Because historically, like you said, the equipment used might be compaction you tend to do that. So what are your management strategies to reduce the compaction and get the most out of that manure as far as whether it's incorporated, injected? And I know your effluent's probably all injected, but talk your beef side.
Yeah, so our beef side is probably our bigger struggle. Let me back up. When we switched to strip till and no till, that was our biggest concern. How do we handle it? So, and believe it or not, in the state of Minnesota, we've got some pretty hefty regulations on what we can do as a CAFO. So handling our beef manure, you know, a lot of that manure is generated in the wintertime. So we've been spreading in the wintertime, which then our ground is froze hard as a brick. It does, you know, compaction's not an issue. And that's what we would love to do. However, Minnesota, in all of its infinite wisdom, decided to block us from being able to spread in the wintertime. So we ended up, you know, and this is part of what's I struggle with. If I'm a believer that if you want to build communities, you need livestock because it just the money turns around in the community so much faster. So with that being said, I feel like the state of Minnesota doesn't really appreciate that. But so what we had to do is spend $500,000, a little over, to build a stacking pad that we could stack this manure in the times when we're not allowed to haul it or when we can't haul it due to cropping. In the spring, hauling manure in the spring here is asking yourself for a train wreck because of the compaction issues.
100%.
So, you know, what we basically have done is we've gone to anything we have to pile gets composted. Whether it sits there till summertime when we get the right weather to compost properly or whatever. But we do a lot of composting. That's been a big one for us. We got one of our guys that just, for whatever reason, he's taken a real passion in making sure he manages those compost piles well and gives us a great product to spread on the field. So, and then with that, So we can spread, you know, certain months of the spring in the fall. I think we could spread up to the end of December. We can spread part of January. I'm not 100% sure on this anymore, but yeah, February, March, I know are completely out. You can't spread anything. So we try and get as much of our manure out then, and then the rest gets piled. And then this is where our small grains come in. So our small grains allow us to be, if we put a cover crop behind our small grain, we're allowed to spread on that. So that's where we compost all this, haul it out there then. It's taken manure, you know, manure used to be a secondary thought. You just hauled it when it needed to be hauled. You managed it best you could. Now it's a plan. Like you have a plan how you're going to do this and carry this out. And you just hope Mother Nature doesn't pack it up your butt trying to do it, you know?
What does that rotation look like? So you're looking at, you said the cereal followed by a cover, then I'm assuming going into, after that cover, going into the corn. So this is pre-corn where you get the majority of that manure down in that cycle.
Yes. Yeah. So typically, you know, my go-to rotation is, you know, corn, then we go to soybeans. Then I would go to a small grain, whether that's rye, trit, oats, and then I'd go back to corn. In between the small grain and the corn is when I try and get that manure out there. Now, what we try to do is we also bring in the injected manure in there in between corns. So, we found that, you know, I can almost grow better corn the second year after oats than I can the first year after oats because of this, the stuff, what's happening between the manure and the different biomass. I mean, man,
yeah, all that carbon. To get good,
it's just amazing what that does. So that's kind of our go-to rotation. Small grains, unfortunately, I was just looking at some P&Ls the other day, is it's so hard to make them work up here. Even, and that's why we've gone to the contracts for seed production just to get a little bit of premium on it. But we just can't generate enough revenue to cover land costs here. You know, ground up here is bringing $16,000 an acre. And I can grow 250 bushel corn all day long, you know? So it just really what we're trying to do, from a crop rotation standpoint is provide for the feedlot. We also bale all the straw off of those small grains and blend that in with our hay. So it allows us to not have to buy so much hay or buy any hay, actually. So it's a give and take, right? It's still one big enterprise and one operation. And sometimes you have to cover your eyes when you look at the P&L of one part.
Yeah. And I think that's a really valuable. There's a lot of systems where there's a point in the system that's a net negative at that moment, but the long-term or the overarching is usually a little bit in the black. It's a little bit of a net positive. You're taking a loss for a longer term situation.
Absolutely. And the big one that we're seeing, you know, up here, we've struggled with corn rootworm so bad because thank goodness I live in our areas of heavy livestock area between us and Northwest Iowa. I mean, there's more livestock up here than you can shake a stick at, which is great. I love it. But what it does do is a lot of demand for feed, which means there's a lot of corn on corn, which means we end up with a lot of rootworm. And one thing we've found that by implementing this rotation, we've completely pulled insecticides pretty much out of the picture. And you know, that's 20, 30, 40 bucks an acre right there. So that's kind of how we, like you said, you just kind of overall have to look at a black over the rotation.
So on your feedlots, are you bringing in like mid weights and putting a couple hundred pounds on, sending them out? You got much cow calf? What's that look like? Are you bringing in everything from outside?
Yeah, everything comes in from outside. We do not have cow calf. I wish we did right now. And honestly, right. Right now, you know, it's funny. People always ask me, "Wow, cattle prices are good. You must be making a ton of money." I'm like, "No, the bank's making a heck of a lot of money off me." It's right now. It's probably one of the toughest times in feedlot. I mean, we looked at some cattle. My brother does a lot of that. And right now, I mean, you look at buying anything, putting it in the yard. You're looking at a $200 to $400 a head loss. I'm sorry. We did that one time. I'll never do that again. I don't care if I have to sit empty. There's just so much. There's just right now is a struggle in the feed yard. It's just you just can't find anything that works. What has been beneficial to us has been we've been bringing in a lot of these dairy crosses. So they're a black Angus crossed with a dairy animal. That's given us a nice, consistent rotation. They're always available. Now, they've also gotten very expensive.
Oh, yeah.
But that's about a third to half of our feedlot right now. And then the rest we bring in whatever we can find that works. I mean, honestly,
I was up at the National Striptail Conference in 25, and I visited with a guy. That was his entire system, was that bringing in those dairy crosses. And it was intriguing to see that. And I think he was in northern Minnesota a lot more. And so that was, I hadn't heard about that system. That made a lot of sense. So in a perfect world, what weight are you bringing in and how much gain are you putting on them?
So typically, you know, what we like is we like to bring them in, you know, 600 pounds. That's kind of what we really like. Five to 700 is really the sweet spot, I guess I'll say. We've not been able to compete on these big yearling cattle. You just don't own them long enough. It's kind of like playing Russian roulette at the tables. You know, I mean, you don't know what you're going to use. You're betting on the come all the time. So we just kind of bet on the fact that if we can, the more pounds we can control ourselves gives us the most amount of time to try and eke out a profit. We're going to typically bring those cattle from, you know, from that, let's just say 600 pounds, we're going to bring them to 1400, 1500, 1600 anymore. So we're putting on somewhere between 700 and 1000 pounds, you know?
All right. Well, I've squirreled a little bit too much on the livestock because this is supposed to be the crop, but I like all that. That's the systems that I play
it's
in on
the systems,
regular basis.
Yep.
So with that, is there in your region, is anybody grazing like corn stalks or anything? Would there be a time frame to graze corn stalks?
Yeah, a lot. So there are some guys with some cow-calf pairs here, and there's some you know, for our area, a pretty good sized cow-calf operation is going to be maybe 100 cow-calf pairs. Just because we don't have no pasture, you know, there's just, everything's row cropped. So there's not a lot of available pasture. And when it is, it's 20 acres here, 50 acres there.
A lot of movement.
Yes, they do. Those guys will definitely put their cows out on stalks. We actually when we do a small grain, we come in with a cover crop. We have actually contracted out to some of those cow calf guys. They've fenced it out. They've grazed it. That works really great. The biggest issue is always having a water source for us. But a lot of guys, we've got a couple of contacts that really like doing that, and that gives them some cheap feed for, depending on the weather, but it'll give them cheap feed for several months.
So as you're talking to your system, I thought it made really good sense to do either something on the gain or something like get a little contract grazing out there on those covers. So what is your cover crop situation? You said your wife is the queen of cover crops. So talk about what you all are doing, what she's doing.
And so we started dabbling with some stuff. We found that, you know, it did what we wanted. We just used cereal rye. We just started simple. And so where we've developed, and I'm not even going to pretend to know what it is that she's trying to pull off exactly, but erosion is our number one concern. That is the first thing we're going to go after. And then number two is to alleviate compaction. And number three is to tie up, to hold our nutrients where we put them. So she builds blends or finds blends, to kind of maximize those scenarios behind the cropping system that we're doing. So we've been doing cereal rye for years, and that's worked good. The problem we're having is it's really a little too aggressive for corn. We love it in front of soybeans. It's providing an incredible, we're finding this year was the largest scale we did with it. We did about 400 acres where we let the rye actually grow up with the beans for the first little while. That has probably been the best weed suppression tool we've seen in years. And so we're going to push that harder. The problem what we've had with cereal rye is putting it on ahead of corn is that when you have the right kind of year, and this past year was the right kind of year where we had early growth, you know, we came out of dormancy early, end of February, early March. And that stuff just gets so aggressive that we struggle to get, yep, we struggle to get the stands we want in corn and not compete and herd it and shade it and stuff. We're going to be looking at a little different program. I think we're going to shift more towards an oat. We're going to try and spread oats in beans as they're ahead of combining. that's kind of our strategy there. And to try and minimize, well, number one, we don't have to then spray or terminate come spring, but yet I want enough cover there to surprise, keep us from erosion. So that's really our strategy. And behind small grains, it's what can be grazed well and what can deal with compaction and hold nutrients for the manure we're going to put out there. That's really that simple, I guess, or complicated, whatever way you want to look at it.
Just for me, so I'm an extension specialist. And so the one thing that I heard you say that I have just mad respect for you, what you said is you have a goal. I think there's a lot of times where the goal is just to do cover crops. And I tell them, it's like, look, there's a lot of options, but you need to tell me what's your top three objectives. And then I can tell you what to do. And if you just want to say cover crop, then that answers me nothing, because you've got erosion stabilization. You said it all. For us, it's soil surface carbon creation. Like, we need something to keep that moisture down, right? So cereals are there. But like I said, rye gets so aggressive. But if we play with some oats or barley or something that's going to have more winter kill, or we get a little bit, that makes a ton of sense. And so I just want to tell you, I have a lot of respect for you going into it with a goal and an objective, because I do think that's probably a missing point. And we're out of time. So I got to move in.
This is my problem. Fast.
I squirrel too much, Sean. I get too many things.
It's time for our famous three.
WiseNetics turns podcast airtime into brand authority. We don't sell ads, we elevate voices. If you're ready to boost your authority in the industry, access WiseNetics.com and speak with a brand authority specialist. Let's transform expertise into influence, starting now.
So our three questions I got to wrap up with, you know, where have you gone as a work resource or for help? What's been your go-to?
You know, honestly, my go-to is places like Strip Till Conference. That's probably my best source. Like, Strip Till Conference has been probably the best thing for our operation. Not that I've been able to go every year, but to be able to, you know, talk to guys like-minded. And to be honest, you know, I mean, some people say, well, I have this book or this thing. You know what? I'm not, and I don't mean this to be offensive to anyone, but at the end of the day, it's not written about. Most of the stuff we're doing hasn't been talked about enough to really be in a book anywhere.
And if it's in a book, it's probably so isolated to the area of the book that you can only take bits and pieces.
Exactly. So that, to me, that Strip Till Conference and then just being in those types of that environment. Minnesota has a great system. I've done a lot of work or worked with Jody DeYoung Hughes several times. And she's a great resource. And that's the kind of stuff I'm after.
All right. So I assume you just have a ton of free time. So what do you do? What's your favorite leisurely activity?
You know, for us, for our family, it's heading out to the Black Hills where our cabin is at. We don't get to do it a ton, but that's really where our family gets some time to just relax and spend time together. And so, yeah, we got a cabin up by Deadwood, and that's where
beautiful country.
Yeah.
All right. And finally, where do people go to find out more about your farm and the operation?
Yeah, just, go to FikamaFarms.com or just Google us or YouTube us, just put in Fikama Farms and you'll find all kinds of stuff. We've been we've been putting out videos and doing different things. I recently started a Snapchat thing. I don't even know how that all works, but I've been doing Snapchat stuff and that's been kind of a hit too. So
fantastic. Well, folks, that wraps up another episode of the Crop Science Podcast Show presented by WiseNetics. Thanks for joining us today with our guest, Sean Fikama. Producer from Laverne, Minnesota, co-owner and operator of Fikama Farms Incorporated and Circle F Farms. Remember, if you've enjoyed this podcast, hit that subscribe button so that you get notified every time we drop a new one, and share this video with friends and colleagues if you think they'd enjoy it. Finally, make sure you leave us comments if you have any suggestions for guests or questions for a past guest. Sean, I know it's a busy time for you, so I really appreciate you taking the moment to visit with us. I think this has been a lot of fun. I learned something. I don't know about the rest of them.
Yeah, thank you.
Do you feel overwhelmed with mundane tasks that eat up your valuable time? It's time to reclaim your schedule and focus on what truly matters. Get your time back with elite remote talent without a time zone hassle. Delegate $10 an hour tasks to focus on more $1,000 an hour tasks. Schedule your free strategy call at wisevas.io.